Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and today we take a look at home improvement, your home improvement, and we take a look at decks to start the show with our guest, Chad Spate, back with us. He owns Chad's Design Build, and soon to be in the studio with us as well, Amanda Rudin. She is the sales associate at Brunzell Lumber and Millwork. So we'll be talking about how to decide if you should maybe do a deck project yourself or maybe bring in a professional. I bring in a professional when I have things like that done because I'm somewhat handy, but not that handy. We'll take your questions anyways about decks and other things as well as we move along. So how do you need in the way of help for decks? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Chad Spate, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
So let's talk about decks to start with. Do they add a lot to the home, to a home?
Well, they certainly can. A lot of homeowners tend to think about adding a deck to their home at some point. It's a very common improvement project. And, you know, one of the considerations for outdoor space is, do you want to protect yourself from mosquitoes and bugs? And that's when, you know, we're looking maybe at a screen porch. But a lot of the materials that go on a deck will end up in that screen porch. And decks are a great way to get up off the ground, to have a nice kind of outdoor living space. You know, the railings are a decorative feature that are very nice. You know, lighting. I mean, there are many aspects to a deck that make them very attractive for many homeowners.
Yeah, and I was thinking about it. I had, I guess you'd call it a deck. It was a screened-in for one home that I had where we had a tremendous number of mosquitoes and not much breeze. So I had a screen porch. But then the next home I bought on the lake, I had a nice breeze and put a deck without the, you know, the porch operation. And Amanda Rudin joins us, by the way. Amanda, hi.
Hi.
She's the sales associate at Brunzell Lumber and Millwork. And it's great to have her along, too, because she spends a lot of time dealing with all sorts of deck kinds of issues, I think. Tell us a little about your background.
I've been with Brunzell now for just over 3 years. In that time, I've really learned a lot about the decking industry and other building industries. I come from a background of other hardware entities previous to Brunzell. So every day is a learning curve, but it's an enjoyable learning curve, that's for sure.
Well, in your mind, what should homeowners consider when looking at adding a deck?
The biggest thing, I think, is first to really look at where your deck is going to go on your home. Is it low to the ground? Is it high up? What view are you looking at? What do you want to preserve when you're on your deck? You know, is it a view that you really want to look at? Are you trying to block a neighbor's home? Things like that are really, what do you want out of your deck? Is it going to be an outdoor living space? Is it going to be an entertainment space? Is it going to be a cooking space? What parts of that are important to you and where do you want to really focus? Those are the key things that I think we really delve into first with the homeowners when they come in. And then once we know those answers, I feel like that's when we can really help them pick the right products for their project and really help them figure out which is the most important feature and then which ones are underneath that and really help them that way.
I was thinking about the deck on our lake home. It had a deck, but I didn't like it. It was a two-story deck. So there was a deck above and a deck below. And I didn't like how it created some visual problems from the second floor looking across at the Capitol, which was, you want to look at the Capitol if you've got that view. So we took it down and put in just a lower one that stayed. I'm wondering about trends. Are there trends that you guys are seeing in the way people look at decks?
Well, so the really big thing that has come onto the market in the last generation has been synthetic products.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it used to be that, you know, back 40 years ago, decks were primarily built out of redwood or cedar. And those were the appropriate natural woods that have some rot resistance and some pest resistance. And, you know, we still will occasionally stumble onto a well-maintained redwood and sometimes an old cedar deck. They if properly maintained, they are amazing. But slowly the industry transitioned to treated lumber because it's a lot less expensive for many homeowners. So most outdoor decks that are 20 or 30 years old are treated. But then in the last 20 years, there's been a growing number of synthetic materials that have, you know, supplanted that natural wood decking. And, of course, Amanda can speak more to some of the ins and outs of these things. But for our clients, I can say that, you know, the question we're always asking is, well, do you want a low-maintenance surface on your deck? And there are a variety of products out there. We try not to be an early adopter of new products because we've had some products over the years that haven't worked out that well, and we end up having to replace them. But there are a couple of companies that have been around for a long time that we tend to work with, and those are Trex Decking and AZEK are the two that we tend to install for our clients. And that's just because I know that not only have the products themselves been around for a number of decades, but the companies are likely to be around and will stand behind it.
Yeah. Is that your experience as well, Amanda?
Yeah, right now the trend is more towards the synthetic or composite, depending on the terminology, decking materials. It is definitely the low maintenance aspect of them that people want. They want that beautiful deck. They just don't want to have to stain it every year or two or three.
I have always hated that.
It's a burden. And, you know, it's one thing to say the deck boards and to do the flat surface, but then, you know, inevitably you have the railings, which are always a pain. And and so, you know, it's not a weekend job. And if it is, it's a couple of weekends and you gotta hope the weather's with you at the same time. That's always part of the problem. So we do see the trend moving towards synthetic products, both in railings and deckings. As he said, you know, we do see a large growth of Trex, just being the name brand out there that everybody uses, but also because it is a very good product and they are expanding their product line every couple of years to really meet the trends. And then we also have, you know, AZEK and TimberTech, which are also composite companies or composite and PVC. There's also, you know, Decorator is out there as well now. And there's just many, many brands that we have available for our access. It's just a lot of it comes down to color selection by the customer, look, what they want to blend here and there, and a lot of times their budget as well. I mean, they do have a range, and so we always try and be respectful of that as well.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we have callers online. Randy in Ripon has something that may relate to this. Let's go there. Hi, Randy. Thank you for calling. Yeah, what's on your mind today?
Well, I've been a builder for 45 years, and the trend is towards the synthetics. I always recommend them. But I would urge people to avoid the ones that are hollow, because when that first came out, I did some, and I've gone back to them 20 years later, and the ends are all split. And I avoid that hollow stuff as much as possible. But my question for your guest is, I'm bidding on a porch, and the lumberyard is trying to sell me this. It's a metal block that you pound four stainless steel rods into the ground with. And I wonder if he has any experience with those and what his thoughts are. Apparently, they meet code. I it's something new to me, and I'm a little leery. So
okay.
I'll get your response on the off the air. Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Amanda, do you want to take a crack at that?
I'm not 100% sure of exactly the exact material. It sounds like what we would call a diamond pier. It's a name brand. It is a concrete round, not quite round, shape about the size of a beach ball. And it does have four metal rods that you do hammer in with a electric jackhammer with a special bit at the end. And they do meet code. The DP50 specifically is code rated. They do have a longer one in case you need it for higher structure. The Wisconsin code does allow it. It is specifically designed for places where maybe you don't have clearance or don't want to do all the concrete work. It replaces a lot of that concrete wait time, and a lot of the the concrete need to go straight down where these piers will go out in angles. The only time
so
you
this
can't
is a footing? Is it a footing?
It's a version of a footing is what I'm thinking he's asking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have not been utilizing that particular technology, but we have looked into it on a couple of projects, and it is now possible to drive a pylon down. There are a couple of companies out there that do this, where they will come out and they'll drive down this pylon, and because they have equipment attached to the top of that as they're driving it into the ground, they have to meet a certain amount of compression and resistance. And once they've met that, then they're code compliant. And so you can drive this thing into the ground and meet the spec for whatever structure you're building. And this allows you also to avoid having to dig a footing, a pier footing, and then fill it with concrete, things like that.
Yeah.
So there are a few ways out there now that we can be creative with the footings.
Yeah, interesting. I did not know about those things. So it's good for me, and I hope it's good for you as you listen. And if you have a question, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Mark in Fort Atkinson has something. Let's go there. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning. I am about to start a deck this spring, and I wanted to put a screen porch on a portion of it. And I was wondering, instead of putting screening under the deck to keep the bugs from coming up through the gaps between the deck boards, if using porch boards, which I have seen synthetic porch boards, which are tongue grooved together, if that would be appropriate, or if there's any pitfalls you might think of for doing that.
Sure. That is a great question, Mark. Thanks for calling in. That is an option that you can explore. There are tongue and groove synthetic porch flooring materials. AZEK is the brand that we have worked with that I did mention earlier that also makes synthetic decking. The one thing that you want to think about whenever you put in a solid floor, just if you also were using a Douglas fir or some other wood product, it has to have a little bit of a pitch on it so that the water is not going to collect in various low points. You know, you want it to drain. You don't have to do that when you build a traditional deck because there's a gap between each deck board. And you are correctly pointing out one of the challenges that we're always discussing with our clients. If you are building a screen porch, you want to make sure that if the floor itself is not solid, you have incorporated some sort of screening so that the bugs aren't going to just fly up through those cracks and then you'll be bitten by mosquitoes in your screen porch, which is not a very happy situation.
No, it is not. Anything to add to that, Amanda?
No, there are other brands that do tongue and groove now. It's becoming more and more of a trend. In fact, this year alone, two other brands have brought out tongue and groove porch flooring. So I agree. We see AZEK purchased all the time, but there are more colors now coming out to really meet the demands of the market.
Taking a look at decks, maybe building a new one or maybe improving the one you've got or tearing it out and putting in a new one with our two guests today. Chad Spade, he owns Chad's Design Build. Amanda Rudin is the sales associate at Brunzell Lumber and Millwork. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. And you are listening to the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at home improvement issues. Decks come to mind when we've got weather starting to get warmer here in Wisconsin, so we thought it'd be a good time to at least focus on that for a bit. And we'll take some other home improvement questions as we move along as well. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Chad Spate. He owns Chad's Design Build. Amanda Rudin is a sales associate at Brunzell Lumber and Millwork. So really pleased to have them along. And we have, I think, every line filled, so let's go back to the phone. Eric in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Eric.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a couple things. Milwaukee Lumber had on their sign, it said, forget the wall and build a deck, invite everybody over. I thought that was pretty good.
I like that.
Anyway, I was curious, if you build a deck, are the codes statewide on a deck, or do they go by county? And so, I'll get my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks, Eric.
That's a great question, Eric. So typically zoning is primarily governed by the county level, but for municipalities, larger municipalities like Madison, you are dealing directly with zoning in the city itself. And there are unique codes, whoever the governing body is. So the simple answer to your question is that generally you have to ask. If you live in Madison, Milwaukee, or another large city, the zoning questions will be able to be handled right there at their building and zoning desk. But and to that point, in these different places, we do occasionally see some variations in what is required. And I will say that since we are talking today about decks, because a deck is attached to your home, and so long as that deck is typically 2 feet above ground, it is no longer just a landscaping feature, but it, it is a part of the home. And so it has to comply with setbacks. And of course, it has to comply with the building codes for structural integrity and for safety. Now, when you're down below a certain height, then it becomes more of a landscaping feature. And sometimes there are some exceptions once you're in that realm.
Thank you very much for that call. Appreciate your call. I have to admit that on my lake home, in the end, I wound up taking down both decks and putting in a stone patio just because of the lay of the land there and how it went out to the lake. It just made more sense for me not to have that deck. Mm-hmm. Plus, I constantly had raccoons underneath the old deck, which drove me crazy.
Sure.
Let's take another call here on to Bob in Ontario, Wisconsin. Hi, Bob.
Hey, good morning. Good afternoon, I guess it is almost. Hey, I've got a deck that I put on 2 years ago. It's white oak. It's very rustic looking because I have a log home. It's been up, like I said, 2 years ago. It's starting to gray really nice. I want to know what kind of stain should I put on there.
So, Bob, that's a great question. Thanks for the call. It's fairly unusual to have a hardwood exterior deck or mm-hmm. just to have hardwood on the exterior of a structure. And so that's where I would defer to some of the experts that we use, both as suppliers and some of the painting contractors we work with, as to what would be the most appropriate material. It is probably going to require more care than what we would typically have to give. But depending on exposure to the sun and how wet it gets. These are all factors too. So I wish I could be of more assistance there, but
yeah. Why don't we use hardwoods there? Is it because of that? Because of,
well, so the softer woods, the conifers, are simply more resilient when they are exposed to the extremes. And so I'll give you the example. Many of us are familiar with oak hardwood flooring in a home.
Yeah.
And if you have an older home, you'll see a lot of gaps in those floors. And that's coming from the wood experiencing both temperature changes throughout its life and also occasional moisture contact and humidity changes. And all of that will really impact how that wood performs and how long it lasts. And it's true that there are very few materials that don't move around a lot due to temperature change and moisture exposure. But for example, PVC decking, which we're talking some about today, that will move a lot due to temperature changes, and we have to design for that. But the conifer, the softwoods, are just more resilient in an outdoor environment where they are getting all of that challenging weather.
Yeah, there we go. Bob, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You need to do a little more research yet, I guess, before you decide what you want to do with that. Let's go to Tim in Menominee next. Hi, Tim. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm a satellite installer, and on occasion I've come across a dish that's been bolted to a deck, not the deck surface, but you know, the post or something like that. And I've noticed the composite materials don't seem to hold lag bolts as well. Is there a alternative that might work better to holding something?
I guess my first question would be, if they are not holding to, say, like the fascia bolt or the fascia boards, or if they are not holding to the actual, like, the lag bolts that are holding onto the structure, underneath the deck. If it is the fascia boards, there has been a learning curve on the fasteners for fascia boards because it is a vertical surface minus, you know, instead of a horizontal surface, which they figured out very quickly how to do those fasteners. Fascia has now gone into the realm where they just need a larger head screw. They used to want to try and use a trim head screw because then it wasn't as visible. And the problem is that exactly what it does is it pulls out of that, because there's a two surfaces then pulling. It's pulling away from the deck board itself or the fascia board of the structure. And then you also have the vertical application pulling against it as well, which is why the trim head screws were not working as well. So there has been a remodel in that, and sometimes it's just the older version that you're probably seeing if that is what you were describing.
Mm, there we go.
Yeah, I would just add that one thing that we know to be true with these synthetic products is that they are not typically structural. You know, we are using them purely for the finish material. So as Amanda referenced, you know, like the fascia or a corner board or something might be synthetic. And then when we talk about a deck, the decking or the railing might be synthetic, but the structure underneath it is going to be built out of traditional building materials, which are, you know, that lumber is, or possibly steel framing. That is what you probably want to make sure you're attaching a dish to. You know, you don't want that to be only attached to that veneer, even though it might be an inch thick. You know, that plastic or synthetic composite is not designed to carry a structural load, if that makes sense.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Well, we had an email, and I wanted to show you guys the email. Aaron emailed that the concrete slabs beneath his deck have heaved so much it's damaged siding and the sliding door, as you can see we can see at least in the photo. So it sounds like there's no feasible way to lower the slabs. He's thinking he should cut the slab a couple of inches from the home, remove those inches, and replace with something like pea gravel. Do you have any thoughts on that, Chad?
Sure. So thanks for sending in these photos. It is something that we have occasionally seen, and I think that that approach makes sense, because what's going on is that entire slab is heaving, and unfortunately it is underneath the door and the siding, and it's, you know, destroying your home. And this is why typically if we were going to pour a slab up to a home, you've got two responsible options if you're doing it the first time. You've either got to dowel it into the foundation so that it cannot move, but then you do risk that busting if it is getting wet and significant heaving is happening. But generally, that will prevent this. But if not that, then it should be spaced away from the structure enough so that if it does heave, it will not cause any structural damage. And it sounds like that's what you're proposing to do. That's probably the only reasonable thing you could do at this point.
Yeah. Amanda's agreeing with that. She's nodding her head in agreement on that one. So, Aaron, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Your email, I should say, very much. Bill in Oregon up next with a question. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry. I'm going to deviate a little bit from decks and porches for a minute and just ask you a quick question about siding. I have wood siding, cedar, I believe it's 9-inch, it's 9 or 10 inch in width. Have you encountered any backings or coatings or possibly even alterations of the insulation behind the boards to dissuade woodpeckers?
That is a common problem, Bill, and we've had this question many a time on this show and also on our Wednesday show. Sometimes when Scott Craven's on, people call and say, how the heck do I get rid of the woodpecker or woodpeckers that are...
So if you're committed to keeping wood on the outside of your home, and of course many people are, and it's just not practical to think about completely replacing all of it, then there are... there are very few things that you can do ultimately to prevent this from potentially happening. But I will say that proper preparation of the material will help to maintain the integrity of that siding and trim longer. And so typically with a wood siding, it needs to be back primed. And we'll often find on a home where it has significant woodpecker problems, it was not properly back primed. Under certain circumstances, a lot of moisture that is condensing behind the siding is then being soaked into that wood. And over time, it's diminishing the structural integrity of the wood. And then that makes it a more attractive place for bugs and the sorts of things that woodpeckers love. So, you know, that's a part of the story. So if you are making repairs, make sure that you're back priming the wood. If you were able to replace some or all of the exterior of the home in the problem areas, we find that some of the products out there now that are composites like smart siding or even cement siding, you know, these are much more dense and difficult for woodpeckers to enjoy pecking. You know, a woodpecker typically, when it comes upon a home that has these really dense siding boards, is going to be dissuaded pretty quickly. So the problem there is that, you know, there's a lot of wood on your current home. So.
And I know one caller one time was having that problem, and he had a nearby tree, and he installed a small mirror up in the tree on a branch, and the woodpecker then went to that mirror and pecked on it and didn't go back to the tree. And that may have been during spring season when the birds are territorial and trying to mark their territory, and the woodpecker thought there was another woodpecker coming to get after him, and so he spent a lot of time on that. But I know the scare tactics typically haven't worked too well. Sometimes you can hang down, what do you call it? There's a cloth-like material you can hang down that's very sheer, that will, if it's high up, you can hang it from the eaves, essentially, and that sometimes will dissuade them, too.
Yeah, reflective ribbons, shiny objects. I mean,
sometimes
I've seen
it. Sometimes they work.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
And but, then there's the faux owl that, you know, the plastic owl on the stick.
You'll see seagulls actually sitting on top of the owl.
Right.
They kind of get used to that pretty quickly. But in the short run, every time one, if you see one and you happen to be home or not somebody else's home, run out and with a rattle or something, a pan and a spoon and scare them off. And if you do it often enough, sometimes that's enough to get them.
Yeah, just keep them moving. Somebody else's house, moving. Someone else's problem, unfortunately.
So that's what we got for you, Bill. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, we had another caller who couldn't stay on that wondered about putting in posts for a deck, back to decks for a minute. When you've got a high water table, And I remember that from my lake. You know, I go down 4 feet, 4 inches, and I'm at I was at water.
Right.
And so how do you, what do you do to, if you're putting, you want to put in a deck, and of course you need, you want footings, what do you do?
Well, that's a great question.
You put in a patio.
There are limitations when, you know, depending on your site, certainly.
Yeah.
And there is an obvious risk to building that close to the water table. There are no easy, obvious answers.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that we've run into that have, you know, lake homes or patios, but they don't want to do a patio step down. They
right.
want to be a little bit more at grade with the home,
yes.
or they have just enough relief that they need that. It's still just one step down. You know, because of what Chad said about, you know, sometimes it's considered landscaping because it's under the 24-inch rule, depending on your jurisdiction. A lot of times you can get away with not having to do as deep of footings. You can get away with a lot more creative ways of getting some sort of foundation in there because you don't need railings. You don't need all the structure because you're not so high up. And then it just picking your products correctly for that case, making sure that you keep with, you know, either a PVC or a heavily synthetic non-composite material that doesn't have wood fibers in it because you're so close to the ground and because you have so many water issues with being on the lake and moisture. And just maybe looking at different types of foundation ways that way. I mean, those products are designed to actually be submerged. They're easily used for like docks and
yeah.
and things like that. So just picking your products carefully so that you don't have to go back in and tear it out is always key. But getting creative. I mean, if you can, you know, try and get under the radar for as much structure so you don't have to go as deep.
Tom in Fish Creek has something for us. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Yeah, you know, you've been discussing different materials for decks, and over the years I've worked with redwood, cedar, green lumber, composite, et cetera, and never really been satisfied because it basically, a lot of it boils down to the structure underneath the deck itself, and composites have come a long way, but they're still not structural yet, quite yet, as far as I know. But I stumbled on a product a couple years ago called Lock Dry. It's a metal decking surface. It's aluminum, extruded aluminum that locks into each other as it goes along and creates not only a roof, but a floor, a watertight floor, without having to deal with all the drainage problems between the gaps and the boards. It's just something to look into. And putting that on top of a steel structure, now you've really eliminated a lot of maintenance problems over the years. Just wanted to toss that out there. It's called Lock Dry.
Yeah.
Not necessarily trying to plug a brand, but it's nexaninc.com, Lock Dry. Just something to look into.
All right. Tom, thanks a lot. And I'm sure we got comments. Amanda, you have a comment on that?
I have been made aware of it. It is not something that has been heavily brought to the forefront by the customers. A lot of our drive is customer requests. And while we have seen it, it is easily probably more done on a new deck or a complete tear-off deck. Like he said, he's doing a steel structure underneath, which is not heavily done in this area. And then you're putting this metal decking on top. And a lot of it just comes into where it's typically done on a complete tear out, a complete demo. And a lot of what we see walking into our store and a lot of what the product that we sell towards is resurfacing or just, for lack of a better word, cosmetic. You know, they've got mm-hmm. a few boards that are going, but they're not going to tear the whole structure down. They take off the boards and they find that, you know, everything's still good. We're mostly just doing decking and railing. And so that's why we don't usually get into that. We do have availability to it. It's just not something we've explored as heavily.
Yeah. Chad, have you used it?
We haven't used the product. I am slightly familiar with it. I know it's out there, but it just hasn't been the right answer for any of our clients mm-hmm. as
no.
of yet.
So. Interesting, though. Yeah. Lock Dry. Steve in Rome, we'll go to you next. Hi, Steve.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. 20 years ago when I was 46, I installed a Grabber Deckmaster premium hidden deck fastening system, which had a 2-foot space below the deck level. So I was on my back for days installing these horizontal metal holders, and then the deck boards installed from below as well. We screwed up into them. So the result was a finished floor look on the deck. And now I find that I need to replace those boards, and I'm really wondering, is there any way, simple way, to take those boards off at all?
Ooh, oh boy.
Wow. Yeah, well, thanks for the call.
I think thanks for the call.
Yeah.
It's a tougher one, isn't it?
It is. Well, I mean, so the reason I want to thank you for the call, Steve, is that while I'm sorry that you are faced with this dilemma, and it is going to be challenging to get those boards off, I did want us to talk today about hidden fasteners, which is something that a lot of people don't realize can be fairly easily done nowadays. And the systems have come a long way, and they're a lot easier to install, and it's also a lot easier to dismantle a deck if you have a problem and you need to take it apart. So that particular system that you are referencing, we have encountered that a few times. I have seen it out in the field, but as you have alluded to, it is very difficult to do it unless you have a deck that is, 5 feet or more off the ground and you have easy access to that underside of the structure. I am not aware of how you're going to easily dismantle it other than just getting under there with a screw gun. The only thing I will say is that now the screw guns are a lot lighter. And if you have a 20-year-old screw gun, by all means, go out and get a lithium battery and your arms will be a lot happier when you're done.
That's a very good tip. I hadn't thought of that. There you go, Steve. Oh, you got a little more work ahead of you. Well, it's been 20 years. Maybe you have some sons or daughters who would be interested in learning that whole process.
Excellent advice.
There you go. Thanks again. Well, Richard in Algoma has something for us. Hi, Richard.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I recently put a composite deck on the back of my home.
Yeah.
And when I went to get the building permit, because it was going to be attached, the building inspector mentioned that if I were to put in 9-inch sonotubes, that would be plenty of support for my deck. But if I were to put 12-inch sonotubes in with cement footings, I could actually then build on top of that deck some type of permanent structure. So that's something to consider when people are looking at their deck. What might you want to add, a permanent sunroom, or something else on top of it? It didn't cost that much more, and it was well worth every penny.
Yeah.
So I would advise people to really look at and talk to their building inspector.
Very good point, sir. Amanda, you're nodding in agreement there.
Yes, one of the things that we really trust our contractors and other builders to do is to talk to the customers and ask them, what are your future plans for this? My husband and I put a deck on our house, our brand new house, knowing that in a couple of years we will probably upgrade it into a screened-in porch as we grow into the home. So we did. We structured it accordingly for that. But not everybody knows where they're going to go. So sizing up a little bit is always recommended, especially if there's not a huge cost deterrence. One of the things that we always try and ask when customers come in to the store is, again, what do you see this being? Do you see it being a deck? Do you see it being a 3-season porch? Do you see it being a 4-season porch? Getting the conversation rolling, because some people don't realize that you can convert those later on. It's not just always going to be dictated by deck boards that have a gap in the middle. You can take those out and put tongue and groove flooring in if you want later on and close it into a 3- or 4-season porch. So getting that conversation going, there's a lot of use of online media to find ideas and to find pictures that they love to say, this is what I love about this one. But it doesn't always show the whole picture of what you can do later on with that same idea, that same deck. So that's really important, is to keep thinking where you're going to be in 5 or 10 years with that same structure.
Yeah, and it's not going to cost that much more.
Not usually, no.
At the time. So good thinking, Richard. Thank you so much. Well, we're taking a look at home improvement issues today. We've zeroed in on decks so far. We'll take some other questions as well with our two guests. Chad Spady owns Chad's Design Build. Amanda Rudin is sales associate at Brunzell Lumber and Millwork. Great to have them along. Great to have you listening. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement today, zeroed in so far on decks. We can take some other home improvement questions as well, but it's been fun with the deck questions for sure. Our guest, Chad Spady, owns Chad's Design Build, comes by every other month to talk with us. And today he brought along Amanda Rudin. She's sales associate at Brunzell Lumber and Millwork. So it's always great to have an extra guest along with Chad as well. If you have a question, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. And Harold in Superior has a question for us, so let's go to Harold. Hi, Harold.
Yes, I hope I get through this without coughing, still getting over my flu.
Oh, too bad for that, but what's on your mind?
When I added another deck on our home, we went to the local sawmill, and the guy there, the owner, talked me into putting down tamarack. And I said, gee, I'd never even thought of that or heard of it. And, well, he explained all the wonderful benefits. It's very beautiful, very strong. Seems to be kind of water impervious, and so that's what we did, and it turned out really, really nice, but it splits, and it really splits badly.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they use on flatbed trailers, so you can imagine if it's good enough for them $100,000 trailers that go down the road. It's okay here, but I did end up, I rented a sander, and I sanded it all off, and I used some material, big name material that did not work very well, so I sanded that off, rented a sander, which is a great idea.
Yeah.
Really way to go. And I use this bare solid, and I can't remember the exact name of it, but it's solid stain, and we've got part of our deck is in green, and then our spindles are brown, and so we have kind of a two-tone to it. And it's beautiful, and it's held up very well, and it's sealed all of the cracks. So
yeah,
as far as I'm concerned, it's... We prefer it over. We actually prefer it over synthetic because we can change the color.
You can change the color on it. And tamarack, if you know where tamarack trees grow, they like swamps. There's some tamaracks, they kind of like water, and so they must be good that way. Amanda, have you ever used tamarack?
I'm not familiar with tamarack being used heavily. Just doing a little bit of basic research while Harold was talking. It sounds very similar to what a lot of people are now, if they still want to maintain a real wood deck.
Yeah.
Redwood is still available, but very, very limited and unfortunately getting more and more expensive. So a lot of people have been moving towards the Ipe or ironwood, kind of goes by both names, and other things similar to that. And this wood sounds very familiar to that. It's an extra hard wood. Very, very, very dense. You can stain it any color, which is the joy of being able to do a real wood deck, is that you can still change the color as you change your design ideas outside. And it is more cumbersome to install, is what I've heard from a lot of the contractors, because it's so dense. You yeah. really got to have patience and a good and a good drill.
Yeah, I was going to say you need a good drill for that, and a lot of drill bits,
and a lot of and a lot of pre-drilling. Yes, so. Real wood is still out there. We still do treated decks. We still do cedar decks. But we have been moving more towards the more exotic woods like the Ipe ironwood and other types of hardwoods that are accessible now.
Yeah. Chad, have you?
I'm not familiar with that particular wood that Harold's talking about, but I would concur with everything that Amanda said. I mean, it sounds similar to Ipe, and it is definitely it has its challenges. But I love natural wood, and many people love natural wood, and you just have to be willing to care for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Harold, thanks. Appreciate the call. Well, we have Annie in Brilliant up next. Hi, Annie.
Yeah, hi. I like to know, I need a wooden floor in the bedroom and hallway. What is a good wood?
Thanks for the call. Well, so that's a great question because there are many hardwoods that are readily available that you could install in an interior environment like that. And, you know, we find that oak is probably the most common hardwood that you'll see for a floor, but there are many other options out there. There's maple and birch you know, I would encourage you to think about what you want it to look like and whether you're planning to stain it, for example.
Yeah.
If you are planning to put a natural finish on it, then that will help determine the species that you would want to pick.
Yeah, I kind of like maple, but...
Yeah, maple's great, but then the caveat there, and we deal with this with whenever we're working with maple trims. I mean, if it's a hard maple, it's not going to take a stain very well often. And so you know, if you want a clear finish, and I mean, I too love maple in its natural appearance. So, you know, then that works great.
Amanda, you like maple?
I love the look of natural wood. I'm a sucker for natural wood, anything. You know, I've seen a lot of, we don't do a lot of flooring, but we deal with the design ideas around people's choices for flooring with doors and trim and things like that and kitchen cabinets at the store. And I've seen an uptick in hickory flooring in the last couple of years as far as just requests. That's what they have. So then we're designing around those ideas. So maple, hickory, oak. I've even seen cherry, mostly because I want that red color, even though it's a clear coat or a very light stain. So I see I see trends changing. It's fun to see.
In our home, which is a 1906 home, we left the original wood everywhere except in the kitchen where there was some area where there were some problems that we really couldn't fix what was there. So we put cork in, and it had a really nice advantage if you're standing in the kitchen a lot. The cork it's easier to stand on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So there you go, Annie. You know, you got to have to look and see what looks good for you. And if you go to a place like Brunzella, I imagine you're going to have samples.
We have samples of all types of hardwoods. We just don't do the flooring samples themselves.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. So get someplace where you can see some samples, flooring samples, and you're going to probably figure out what you like the best and go from there. Thanks again for calling. And Jeff in Sturgeon Bay, your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
Hi. Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, I have it's an 18-year-old treated deck that we have never put any kind of finish on. And in last fall, we did power wash it, and we're going to power wash it again this spring to clean it up. But what type of, should we put an oil, like a Thompson's Water Seal, not necessarily that product, but that type of stuff, or a solid stain? I know they have new almost rubberized things.
Yeah. Right. So that's a great question, Jeff. Thanks for the call. So with the older decks, one thing that I will say is you're probably going to want to do some light sanding on that. Nothing too aggressive, but given the fact that it has not been you know, stained or protected for that long. That will help to clean off and smooth the surface of that wood, because when you power wash something or it just gets really wet, that tends to raise the grain on the product, and you want to deal with that. There are a variety of products out there. There's a product that the Forest Products Lab used to recommend here out of Madison. It was CLR, like a Floods was the brand, but there are many products. I mean, I often recommend Consumer Reports as a good source for this sort of information. Our company is not often doing deck refinishing, so...
But you could use... Oil, you could use solid stains.
There's some great oil-based finishes out there, absolutely. And for a horizontal deck, wood surface, an oil-based finish is probably recommended.
Okay, there we go. Well, we've got lots more program coming up here with our two guests, Chad Spade, he owns Chad's Design Build, and Amanda Rudin, who is sales associate at Brunzell Lumber and Millwork. We're going to take a quick look at the news, weather, and find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back, and they'll be with us till 12:30. So you stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at home improvement issues. We've zeroed in a lot on decks, but we can take other questions as well. Our two guests today, Chad Spade, owns Chad's Design Build. Amanda Rudin with us as well. She's a sales associate at Brunzell Lumber and Millwork. Questions for them, we have one open line at 1-800-642-1234, or email us with your questions and maybe even photos at ideas@wpr.org. And I want to go back to that last caller who had a deck that was 20 years old and hadn't done anything with it, Chad, wanted to ask about stains or paints and so forth. But you wanted to throw a caution or two, and Amanda as well.
Well, yeah. So Amanda just made the comment right after we went off the air that, you know, it's really important to take a careful look at that deck, given that it hasn't been treated for that long. Because so often, you know, we take things for granted because they're part of our home and we use them, but you have to inspect a deck to make sure that it's safe. And when something hasn't been refinished for that long, it's suspect. There could be boards that are about to give way. And it's not uncommon for us as a company to help people repair an older structure. We've talked about how, you know, sometimes we'll take off an old deck and we'll find the underlying structure is in pretty good shape, but it needs new decking and maybe a new railing. Or maybe the railing's fine, but the decking needs to be replaced because it's, you know, it's worn out. But it's also possible that some of that structure needs some attention. And I like the way Amanda described it, so I'll let her do it.
Yeah, go ahead, Amanda.
Just take a really good walk around the deck. Make sure that you touch every portion of every board. Just because it looks like it's going to hold your weight, make sure that it does. It doesn't always. We have people come in all the time saying they walked out on their deck and all of a sudden their foot went through a board that they knew was perfectly fine last fall. You know, it does happen. It starts getting springy or spongy. That easily is a sign that maybe we should look at that board and make sure that maybe there's a problem there. And replacing a board or two, not a huge deal. If you see a lot of problems, that's when, you know, you start looking at possibly redoing the whole deck and where does that lead? You know, railings as well.
Yeah. All right. There we go. Carl in Libertyville, Illinois has a question. So let's go there. Hi, Carl.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Sorry. I need to put this on.
No, we're working on a house project. Yeah. First time we've done anything of this scale. And the big part of it that's throwing a puzzle at us is the siding. We've gone through all the options. I think we're set on SmartSide, but I don't know if there's any thoughts, suggestions, common mistakes people make when making final decisions on either the choice of the product or all the different options you have for how you get it painted, how you prepare it, how you maintain it.
Yeah. Well, Chad, do you want to take a crack at that?
Sure. Smart Siding is a product that we use and that we like, but there are a number of products out there. And, of course, whether you're building a new home or whether you're remodeling, it's true. There are so many choices to make, and sometimes it's difficult because, you know, 95% of us out there, you know, don't have unlimited budgets, and
sure,
you have to make some decisions. You know, you're not often able to do everything that you want to do, so you make a few compromises. And so the sorts of things that I would advise you to do is just to make sure that you're selecting products that have a good reputation as being a quality product. I mean, that at the end of the day, that is going to be the thing you regret, is if you substitute a quantified quality product with something that's unknown to save a few dollars.
It's not a good idea.
Another focus is a lot of people get caught up in the small details of that product. So, you know, Chad's bringing up budget. And one of the ways that we really try and help people with their budget is if they really like LP Smart Side, you know, they do have options to do primed and then pre-finish on the job site. And then they have, you know, make up a story, 15, 20 colors that are their stock colors. And then they have the ability to do a custom color. Each has their own price category. And so a lot of times I get a person, I really want this blue. And they bring in a paint sample from somewhere. And they're like, I really want this blue. And while that blue is very pretty, maybe there is a stock color in blue that is acceptable for the project that will save you another 15, 20% on the bottom line. And all you did was change a shade of blue. So a lot of those times it's just once you've picked a product, knowing where those little details lead you price-wise. To make sure that you can stick to the budget.
Yep. And another thing I would add is that, you know, it's important to talk to your builder about maybe some of the things that you could postpone and not do now, but not undo the preparation for those things. So you know what your long-term plan is for the project or the home, but maybe you're not going to put that deck on right now. You know, maybe that will wait, and that will allow you to do everything else that you wanted to do, knowing that 3, 5, 10 years from now, your budget will allow that deck to be built.
Good tips. Carl, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Jan and Appleton the chance to join in. Hi, Jan.
Hi. My house is about 40 years old. About 15 years ago, we added a room onto the back that we used as a porch. About 10 years ago, we had all our windows and sidings replaced. And ever since then, a window in our kitchen leaks. And, of course, I know that Chad and Amanda are going to cringe when I say that it's right underneath an eaves trough, because I know that's a big no-no. But we have the problem, and it's this time of year that it leaks. It's leaking right now. So
yeah.
Our build, the people that did the siding and the windows, they have pretty much put up their hands and said, we don't know what else to do.
Sure.
All I would like to know is who can we call that can help us do some detective work?
Sure. Well, so that's a great question, and I'm sorry that you've got that problem, but of course that's not an unusual thing to have happen. And this time of year, we see a lot of water migrating into homes for a couple of big reasons. One would be the ice damming, where we've got these big chunks of snow and ice around, and the foundation and also up on the roof. And as the rain falls or as some of that snow melts, the water is literally pooling into places that on a typical summer or fall or winter day, there is no water standing up against the house at that location. And so that standing water is going to find its way into the structure, and it's going to cause these sorts of problems. So it's the sort of project that many contractors don't want to touch because it can be very time-consuming and costly to ultimately find the cause. But you're going to need to find someone that you trust who can take the house apart to figure out where the weak link is. There are adhesive underlayments now that are typically installed on the perimeter of the roof, and it's likely that you don't have that, or maybe you do, but it wasn't properly installed. That might solve the problem so that as in future springs when this melting is occurring, the water will not be able to find its way around the flashing and into that wall and drip over the window. But it's also possible that it's getting in somewhere else. It could be migrating under the gutter, into the soffit, and then down the wall.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't have anything to do with the roof.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. You have to think like a detective and follow the laws of physics. And that's what I would do. Those are the places I would look. And I guess if I were going to recommend a contractor, I mean, I always recommend if there's a NARI chapter in the area, or there are NARI members at large, and I promote NARI members just because we have a code of ethics in our membership. I mean, we are sworn to do right by our customers and be, you know, honest in our business dealings, and that's not true of every business association.
How would you find a NARI? And now Jan's in Appleton. There, I'm sure NARI members in Appleton.
There is, I believe, a NARI association up there, but if you just go to NARI.org,
and that's
NARI. Thank you, Larry. So NARI.org, you can go there and search a contractor in your area or contractors in your area. And you should be able to find someone that will be able to help you out with that.
Jan, thank you so much for calling. Brad in Fountain, Minnesota, it's your turn. Hi, Brad.
Hi. Yeah, say, I've just got a question looking for possible product recommendations. I've got a job that I've been dealing with trying to figure out how to go about. It's on an old Victorian house. They want to replace the porch railing, and they're curved. The existing ones are made out of wood, and the ants have been getting into the posts and stuff, and there's a little bit of rot on there. And I was just wondering if there was something better than trying to make up a bent lamination or a stave block and then cutting out the curve, like maybe a vinyl or some sort of porch railing that'll last longer than this last one that's been installed.
Amanda, you want to take a crack at that?
So you can still do it out of wood, like you said, but then you still are dealing with the ant issue. The companies that do railings nowadays, and there are a multitude of the companies, most of them have an option for making a curved railing. It is not something that they walk you through on the job site. It is something that they ask a whole bunch of questions, and you fill out a form and you sign off on it that asks you to really dictate the dimensions and the angle, and they actually make it for you. There are a couple of restrictions that we've run into in the past with these. The one is that they are not unlimited in length. It does require multiple pieces if it's past a certain length. Certain companies have different regulations as to what that is, whether it's 10 feet, 12 feet, or even 18 feet. It's just the length of their boards, and when you bend them, they shrink. They only can use so much of it, or of the railing pieces, excuse me. So You know, once you find a brand or a look that is acceptable to the homeowner for that, most of them offer those options. It is a little bit more time consuming than ordering just standard railing. It typically adds a couple of weeks after sign off to get those railing pieces. So don't expect it in the same time frame as a normal railing, but it is out there now. And the quality is very good, and it is customized to each job. So there isn't, you don't have to make something fit on the job site any longer.
So you'd go, where would you go to find those companies?
A big thing is to just pick a brand of railing at this moment that you really like for the rest of the railing. Maybe not just that railing, whether it be metal or composite is a little bit easier to do the bending and the stretching on than metal. So kind of picking those first. And then once you have that look, let your supplier know what look you're looking for, whether it's Brunzell or anyone else for that matter. And they can help lead you to the right companies that do the bending and go from there.
Good luck, Brad. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Phil in Mount Horeb, it's your turn. Hi, Phil.
Hi. I have a 12-year-old deck. It is 15 by 25. It's got a pressure-treated wood with stained barn red color, solid color. I've got very small clusters of lichens on the benches, which are on the perimeter of the deck. And also we have, of course, the backs on the back of those benches to prevent people from falling off, and guards underneath the bench surface. I'm wondering, with these very small clusters of lichens, what's the best way in a municipal water district to safely but effectively, preferably use a spray and rinse treatment to kill or remove or somehow get rid of those lichens?
All right.
So one of the ways that we recommend, and it's unfortunately a step-by-step process, because you're in a municipality, obviously, and you're concerned with using certain products, start with a labeled deck cleaner. Make sure it says it's good for treated decks. A lot of them say for composite-only decks. Some of them say for cedar-only. They get very specific in the fine print. Try that first. You can use a power washer. The only problem I have with that is sometimes it actually pushes the dirt and everything into the wood instead of cleaning it off of the wood. So I always recommend starting with, unfortunately, a brush and a little bit of cleaner and scrubbing to see if that does it. Dawn does wonders on most decks that I've run across. If those products don't work, because they're both usually fairly mild for you know, city municipality water, then I would recommend going into the next step and working your way up. I don't like recommending starting out with very strong things like bleach, even diluted bleach. Sometimes it just does more hazard to the deck than warranted. And sometimes you can work magic with the easier stuff. So I would start there and work your way up into the more abrasive material. But a brush and a little bit of scrubbing does a lot of good on a lot of those problems.
Yeah. Bet you got a lot of shade there, Phil.
Western exposure. So we have full western sun, and we're still getting these lichens.
Still get the lichens. Huh. Well, that surprises me. But you now have a way to get rid of them. So good luck. Thank you.
Thank you. Yep.
Buzz in Sun Prairie, it's your turn. Hi, Buzz. Buzz, are you there?
Hi. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I'm here.
All right. What's on your mind?
Okay. I have a Trex surface on my deck, and it's about 17 years old. Over the years, different boards have faded to different colors. Is there something that I can put on it to make it all one color and a little more presentable?
Well, Buzz, thanks for calling in. So I'm glad that you raised this issue because back about 20 years ago, I built a play structure for my kids, and I used the first generation of Trex decking. And that's probably what you've got. And this is a product that did not have a PVC shell on it, and it it has had some challenges and issues, and sometimes there was a mold that was developing in some of the surface of it. There was quite a bit of wood chip product in that early Trex decking. And just so depending on, you know, the conditions of your deck, things would happen to it. So those products no longer have those issues. But unfortunately, there's not much that I know of you can do to that product to change its appearance. You know, it's probably a combination of sun fading and some of that, you know, things that are growing in it. So I would suggest cleaning it, trying to clean it well. It could be, you know, another story I can tell is we had a Trex deck that was about 11 years old, and this a client called maybe 3 years ago, and they said, I think there's a problem with my deck. And really, the problem was it needed to be properly cleaned. And we cleaned it, and it was as good as new.
Hmm.
And again, it was a simple, you know, take a mild soapy solution and a scrub brush, and you clean that off, and it looks like a beautiful new deck. So it could be that taking that approach will give you the best bang for the buck. But it also could be that because that was a first-generation board, you may decide you need to replace it.
Yeah, if you don't like the shades. That's what we can do for you today, Buzz. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Well, here we are starting to run out of time. Chad, how do people get a hold of you? You have an online...
You bet. Yeah. So if someone would like to reach out, our website is chadsdesignbuild.com. And I'm Chad at chadsdesignbuild.com. So I do occasionally hear from our listeners, and it's always nice to be able to follow up after the show.
And Amanda, what about Brunzell?
We are available, obviously, via phone throughout the day, and then brunzellumber.com. You can check out everything from our custom millwork to vendors and material links for decking, railing, the doors, windows, trim companies that we work with as well. You know, the kitchen cabinet departments, all of those materials are online as well.
Well, I tell you what, it's been a real pleasure to have you with us, Amanda. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much.
And Chad, it's always a pleasure to have you with us as well. Thank you, Chad.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
Chad Spade owns Chad's Design Build. And by the way, full disclosure, we should mention that Chad's Design Build is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors. So great for that. And Amanda Rudin is the sales associate at Brunzell Lumber and Millwork. So Chad's back on May 9th, and we'll do this all over again with him. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, Olbrich Gardens Director of Horticulture will be back with us to talk about pruning and also garden design with winter interest in mind. So I hope you'll join us tomorrow at 11 or 6 a.m. on Saturday for Garden Talk, or online anytime. And in the meantime, hey, stay with us. Lots in store.